We've waited a month for the two persons who are going to be with us today, and I think after it's over, you will agree it's been worth waiting for. Gloria Steinem may turn out to be Ohio's favorite daughter. She is now, I think, the person who stands for MS in this country. She is an author, a publisher, an editor, a lecturer, and I think above all an evangelist, and she comes here today preaching revolution. The other half of the act fills in the not only sexist side, which Ms. Steinem will talk about, but also the problem of racism in our society. Dorothy Pittman Hughes' name has been connected with child care by many people. She was the founder and director of the West 80th Street Child Care Center 7 years ago, which has been tremendously successful. She's also the chairperson of the Committee for Community Control of Child Care, a national organization now, but an organization that was international before it was national, an organization very much concerned about child care in the university context, and one that has been having group talks with universities in Australia, Sweden, all over the world, as well as in this country. But she is here very much as part of the women's movement. And without any more, I present to you Gloria Steinem and Dorothy Pittman Hughes.
Something must be happening in Ohio that wasn't happening when I grew up in Toledo. Friends and sisters, we started doing this, Dorothy and I, about more than 2 years ago now, going around the country to various groups, at first very small groups of 12 or, you know, few people, which we felt much more comfortable with, because then it could be a kind of rap group and we could sit in a circle and really talk. And now we find ourselves in this old think situation of us up here lecturing to you, and we're sorry about that. And we hope that you'll feel free during the question period to ask anything, comment on anything, talk to each other, and generally turn this into an organizing meeting. No group of this size should be allowed to get away without becoming an organizing meeting, right? And anyway, as we always explain, if we come today and there isn't trouble tomorrow, we haven't really done our job. We started doing it because we felt like leaders of anything, but because we wanted very much to say to other people, and especially to women, what we wished very much had been said to us much sooner. The movement belongs to every woman in this room as much as it does to us, so it's definitely not us telling you. We're only talking about our personal experiences. But we thank you very much for coming and taking time out of your lives, especially the women, because I think we both remember those long, far away days, maybe 3 years ago, 5 years ago, when women would not come to hear another woman. After all, what can she possibly be saying? She's only just another woman like us. So we understand very well that in coming here, you are not honoring us, you're honoring yourselves. I think what I would like most to remind you and me both of, because it's difficult to understand, really, considering the way the movement has been treated by the press, and that was really my personal reason for wanting to do this, to come around and speak, because I just despaired of getting any accurate picture of the women's movement through the press, which insisted on ridiculing and talking about bra burners and everything. Maybe I should say one more time that nobody ever burned a bra, in case you still think that they did, since it appears in everybody's lead paragraph. It's the alliteration that gets to my colleagues in the press, I think. About in 1968, at the Miss America meatpacking contest, there were... There were a group of women, Florence Kennedy among them, who we also lecture with, who's a terrific woman, who's a lawyer, and who's been active in the black movement, the women's movement, and all the overlaps of those movements for many years. That group of women threatened to burn a bra, a steno pad, an apron, a dust mop, and other symbols of oppression, but they didn't do it because they couldn't get a fire permit. We've been much too docile and law-abiding for too long, but that period is over. But I especially wanted to come to do this because I felt in some ways personally responsible for the distortion by the press. After all, I'd been making a living as a writer, even though they still expected me to write about aprons and lampshades and how to make lampshades out of aprons and so on, all the things that happen to women. And to say that which is very obvious, which is that this is a revolution and not a reform, that it is the deepest and serious, most serious and longest kind of revolution, because the twin problems of sexism and racism are the deepest ways in which we are organized into the leaders and the led and the decision makers and the cheap labor. They always come together. The societies that are the most racist are always also the most sexist. They apparently even had a common origin. And that's interesting, that discovery of how these deep divisions began, because it's not something we read. Well, anyway, we read white male history, let's face it. I mean, we don't read we don't read about minority groups in this country, nor do we read about, we're supposed to think that Africa was discovered when the first white male set foot on it, and we never somehow figure out that white people are the minority in the world. In fact, and we don't read about women at all unless they marry or give birth to or carry a pitcher of water to or sew a flag for a man, right? So we are really reading his story very literally. And we dismiss entirely the periods of prehistory, what's dismissed as prehistory, before patriarchy and racism were the dominant ways of social organization. Now, what I'm about to say is kind of a disputed theory, I should tell you that. Anthropologists are not crazy about it. But then science has always, is too frequently been the handmaiden, or the handman, we should say, right? The handman of the status quo. All the best myths have been scientifically proved, and they're still doing it. You know, Arthur Jensen is still trying to prove that the black intelligence is inferior to the white intelligence, and Lionel Tiger is still trying to prove that women are inferior and can't organize in groups and so on. but the human animal was around on this earth for very much longer time than just Charlemagne or whenever it was we started figuring it out in school. And it turns out that there's more and more evidence of the fact that the first half of human history, the first 5,000 years, from say 12,000 to 8,000 BC more or less, were in fact a gynocracy, not a matriarchy, which imitated patriarchy and came later, but a gynocracy, which was the straightaway worship of women and the consideration of women as the first-class citizens. Now, much of the reason that was true was because women bore the children, and that was regarded as a superior function. we've somehow allowed ourselves to get talked into believing it's an inferior function, and that it somehow makes us inferior and makes us require certain kinds of restrictions and protections and so on. But for the first half of human history, it was regarded as superior. And it was, I suppose you could call it a period of womb envy instead of penis envy, which makes every bit as much sense to us. But much of the reason it was true was because the process of creation was not understood